So today we're going to do the last topic for the course, namely the diagonalizations of symmetric matrices. So what we're going to show is that every symmetric matrix can be diagonalized, in fact, diagonalized in a very special way. So this is the basic theorem that we're going to be proving. If A is a symmetric matrix, then there is an orthogonal matrix B such that P inverse AP is a diagonal matrix. Now, one thing about orthogonal matrices is that P inverse is P transpose. So we'll see a nice application of that fact. So this is stronger than just diagonalizability. It's diagonalizable by means of a matrix which is orthogonal. And these orthogonal means the columns are an orthonormal set of vectors. They're orthogonal and of unit length. So let's just give an example. Actually, we proved this in the case a couple lectures ago. We proved this for 2x2 matrices. So let's just give an example, an example of an application. So let's take A to be this matrix, 2, 1, 1, 2. It's a symmetric matrix. We know, the theorem says you can diagonalize it. Let's just go and do that. So the characteristic polynomial of A equals, it's lambda squared minus the trace of the matrix, which is 4 lambda, plus the determinant, which is 4 minus 1, which is 3. And this factorizes into lambda minus 3 into lambda minus 1. Actually, the eigenvalues are 1 and 3. These you could have determined by inspection before, because the row sums of this matrix are 3. All the rows add up to 3. So you know the row sum is an eigenvector, and the eigenvector is an eigenvalue, and the eigenvector is the vector with all 1s. So that's one eigenvector that you have. And the other eigenvector, if you subtract off 1 from that matrix, from the diagonal of that matrix, you get again clearly 1, 1, 1, 1, which is a singular matrix. So the determinant is 0, so 1 is an eigenvalue, as you can see. Now, what would be the eigenvector for that eigenvalue? Knowing the theory, just look at it as an application of the theory. What would be the eigenvector for eigenvalue 1? Knowing the eigenvector for eigenvalue 3 is 1, 1. What would it be? One one is one of them. Yeah, you're just repeating. I want the one. You can't. Eigenvectors correspond to distinct eigenvalues. R. That's the point. For a symmetric matrix, eigenvectors correspond to. We did it for 2x2 matrices by showing the eigenvectors correspond to distinct eigenvalues were. What? Well, that's just minus, they're not orthogonal, right? A vector can't be orthogonal to any scalar multiple of itself, except 0. Now, what does it mean? Look at the theorem. You're looking for an orthogonal matrix P. What are the columns of that matrix? What are they? in terms of the matrix A. You've been practicing that in web work, and you've been doing the problem. So what is it? What are the columns of the diagonalizing matrix? Eigenvectors of A. Being orthogonal, what does that mean? The statement says it's orthogonal. What does that mean? P is orthogonal. It means the columns are? Orthogonal, in particular, they're of unit length, and they're orthogonal. That is, their inner product, their dot product is zero. I have one vector, 1, 1. The other one is a vector which is orthogonal to 1, 1. Don't have too much choice. Here's 1, 1. Give me a vector orthogonal to 1 minus 1. Ah. 1, 1. 1 minus 1. So already, without doing any calculating, just knowing the statement of the theorem, I already have independent eigenvectors. I have a basis of eigenvectors. So A into 1, 1 is 3, 1, 1. And 1 minus 1 is orthogonal to 1, 1. And so it must be an eigenvector. It must be an eigenvector with eigenvalue with the other eigenvector. So it must, since the other eigenvector is orthogonal to that one, right? And that's orthogonal. They must be multiples. If any multiple of an eigenvector is an eigenvector with the same eigenvalue, yeah.
Wouldn't negative 1, 1 work at this spot?
Negative 1. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you said negative 1, 1. I mean, I thought you said minus 1, 1. So what you mean is negative 1, 1. Oh, okay, sorry. You're correct. I just... Right, well, it's minus this. You're absolutely right. There you go. I thought you meant minus 1, minus 1. Negative 1, 1. So negative was outside. Sorry. Is orthogonal to 1, 1? So this implies... that 1 minus 1 is the eigenvector with eigenvalue 1. Check it out. Indeed, A into 1 minus 1 is equal to 1 times 1 minus 1 is 2 minus 1, which is 1. And then 2 times 1 minus 1 is 1 minus 2, which is minus 1. Okay. So indeed, it is an eigenvector with eigenvalue 1, as predicted. Okay. So now, what is P? So if we take P, so let's take P. Now the columns of P, well, the first thing you want to write are 1, 1, and 1 minus 1. Well, that matrix, the columns are orthogonal. However, it's not an orthogonal matrix. Be careful of that. I mean, the columns for an orthogonal matrix have to be not only orthogonal vectors, but of unit length. That is, orthonormal, as you say. So that's, because when you take P transpose P, you want the identity. That's the same thing as saying that the columns of P are orthogonal and that the are of unit length. So here we have to divide the columns by their length, which is in each case root 2. So we have to take 1 over root 2, 1 over root 2, it's acting up again. What's going on? It's actually showing how this actually works is if I'm too close and I move my pen like that, and the process is doing something else, what happens is that it actually will draw the line. It uses splines. So it actually will fill in, try to approximate that the motion of my pen by approximated by a certain curve called a spline, so that you get the impression that I did that. But I guess it was just moving my pen was too close and it was doing something else that kept that in memory. Anyway, okay, so 1 over root 2 and minus 1 over root 2. That's an orthogonal matrix. And P inverse, is what? It's a diagonal matrix because the columns of P are eigenvectors. And what is the diagonal matrix in this case? Well, the first entry, the first diagonal entry, will be the eigenvalue for the eigenvector, which is the first column of P, and that's 3. 1, 1, 3, and then, and then 0, and then 0, and then the other one will be 1. Okay, so. Okay, let me just make use of the fact that this is also equal to P transposed AP to give a nice application of that fact. So basically, if I take... so let's just look at this. So let's give an application. To so-called quadratic forms. Now in this particular case, if you look at this, you'll see this. If you take 4x1 squared plus 2x1x2 plus 4x2 squared. I claim that you can write this in the following form. You can write this as x1x2, then times this matrix. Won't be a 4. You can write this as this matrix, 2, 1, one, 2, times the column matrix, x1, x2. So in other words, what we're going to show is that we're going to be able to study quadratic forms. The left-hand side is what we call a quadratic form. It's a quadratic polynomial, in this case, a quadratic form in two variables, x1, x2. So it's a homogeneous polynomial of degree 2 in the variables. That's what we call a quadratic form. Well, you can see this. This you can see quite easily just by multiplying this out. If you multiply the right-hand side out, you can just check that. So, for example, if you want to, if you want to multiply the right-hand side out, we'll prove this a little bit later and more general. In general, let's prove this more generally. Let me prove this more generally. So, let me just take x1, x2. Let me take a b. BC, let me take a symmetric matrix, and then I'm going to write a column, x1, x2. And let me just multiply this out, x1, x2. And on the right-hand side, I'm going to have ax1 plus bx2, and bx1 plus cx2. Now, if I just carry this out, you see that you're going to get x1 times the first, so you're going to get ax1 squared plus bx1 x2. This multiply x1 times the first, taking the dot product of those two vectors. And then I'm going to get another bx1 x2 plus cx2 squared. So what you're going to get here is just ax you're going to get ax1 squared plus 2bx1 x2 plus cx2 squared. Okay. So you can see the relationship between the quadratic form and the matrix representation of it in this way as a product of a row matrix, the row variables times the symmetric matrix times the transpose of that. Yeah. What do you mean? Well, there's only one way of doing it this way. I mean, there's only. I want to write it in this particular way for a reason. Well, I don't want to. It's on the left-hand side. It's there without the matrix. On the left-hand side, it's already without the matrix, right? The quadratic form. I don't understand the question. I want to write it in this. I claim that you can always write it as a product of the row vector of variables times the times a symmetric matrix times the transpose of that row vector. Okay. So in other words, it's always so in other words, you can write it as sort of x. Okay. So in other words, what you have shown, therefore, x a x 1, this is the point, plus 2 b x 1 x 2 plus c x 2 squared. That's this expression what I want to study. And to study it, I say that, so this is going to be x transposed times this matrix a b b c times x, where x is this column x1, x2. Okay. So that's the way to write that matrix. Now, why we do this is because you see that if I make a change of variables, in other words, if I let x set x equals to py. Okay. Now what is y? The significance of y is that it's the coordinates of x in the, so in other words, this is equal to, if you like, this is equal to p1y1 plus p2, well, actually, the y should be on the other side, because the scalars, usually you write them on the other side. So this is equal to y1 p1 plus y2 p2. So in other words, the significance of the y1 and y2, they're the coordinates of the vector x. If you look at the x1, x2, they're the coordinates of x with respect to the standard basis. Okay. So this matrix P, so if I introduce this matrix y, so x is py. So if you want y, you'd have to take y would be p inverse x to actually find the coordinates of x in the basis. You'd have to compute the inverse of P. Well, in this case, it's easy because P inverse is P transpose. So it's very easy to compute the Y's in terms of the X. So here Y is in fact equal to P inverse X, which is P transposed times X. Okay, so we can actually do the computations really quite easily. So if we know so now what I'm saying here is that when I do this here, if I do my quadratic form, if you get that 2x1 squared plus 2x1 x2 plus 2x2 squared is then, if I want to write that in terms not of the coordinates x1, x2, but in terms of the coordinates with respect to the basis P1, P2, which are eigenvectors, what will that be? What will that be? Well, we know that P transposed AP, so let's just, I claim that this is going to be equal to, if you see, if you replace X in the above by PX, so you're going to get, if I replace X1, X2 by what it is in terms of Y, so I'm going to get the matrix multiplied by PY, and on the other side, I'm going to have the X transpose is Y transpose, P transpose. So in that case, what's going to happen, I'm going to have Y transpose times P transpose times the matrix A times P times the matrix Y. And we've just computed P transpose AP is 3, 1. So in other words, I've diagonalized my matrix P. So in other words, I have Y transpose times 3, 0, 0, 1 Y transpose times that matrix times Y. I'll do this calculation, but I have a little bit more space and more generality. This is going to be equal to, I'll just write it out here. Y transpose times, let me write it all out. I think I have enough room to do it here before I flip the page. So this is going to be Y transpose, P transpose times my matrix A that I had above. This thing is getting misbehaving. Y transpose times P transpose times A times P times Y. And so this is Y transpose times the matrix 3, 0, 0, 1 times Y. And this is equal to, now I don't have any cross terms now. So in other words, this is going to be 3Y1 squared plus y2 squared. So in other words, what I've done by using this orthogonal change of coordinates, which is determined by the eigenvalues, the eigenvectors of my matrix A, I can rewrite that quadratic form in which there's an xy term in terms of another basis. I get rid of it. So I get rid of the quadratic expression. So now I have so for example, now that's an application. Supposing I want to identify the curve, for example, the left-hand side equal to something, say equal to 2, to get rid of the 2. So just as an application, let's just see. So for example, so therefore we can identify, therefore for example, therefore we can identify, for example, the curve, say 2x1 squared plus 2x1x2 plus 2x2 squared, say equals to 2, by a change of coordinates, by an orthogonal change of coordinates. In other words, if you take in this particular case, so in the coordinate system, whose basis is P1, P2, the equation of the curve as equation, three y1 squared plus y2 squared equals 1. Okay. So you could write this, e.g., you could write this, for example, say y1 squared over 1 over root 3 squared plus y2 squared over 1 squared equals 1. And this is an example we call it. This is an ellipse with there's two axes. There's a major axis with major axis of length
2 with major axis along, what is the direction of the major axis? Now, the major axis in this case is the axis corresponding to the vector for which y2 is the coordinate, and that's the vector p2, and p2 was 1 minus minus 1. So we'll just p2 and minor axis along p1. So let's just get, you can just actually draw a sketch. So for example, let's just draw the sketch. So here, so let's draw, these are, let's call this the x1 axis, x2 axis. And now the vectors p1 and p2, yeah?
Good question. Why is 3y1 squared
plus
y2 squared equals 1? Why is it 1?
Because I said it so. Because let's consider this curve. So I said, for example, you could put it 3 if you like. You could put it 5. I'm just giving.
It's completely
out. Yeah. Any constant would do. 0 would be okay. Well, 0 wouldn't be too interesting because it just would be consist of just the origin. Or minus 1 wouldn't be too interesting because it'd be an imaginary ellipse. It would have no points at all. So it's just an example of a quadratic curve. And what I'm basically showing, is that all the quadratic curves are just going to be the conics. Because when you do it in general, the coefficients of y1 and y2 could be positive or negative, and you'll get different curves. What I'm saying is that using this way, you can diagonalize any quadratic form, say qxy. So in particular, if you want to study the curve qxy equals to 1, then by diagonalizing, you'll get rid of the xy term. And so you can identify it as there's an ellipse, parabola, hyperbola, etc. Okay. So in this particular case, the axes. This corresponds to the. This is my new axis, if you like, the y2 axis that corresponds to. This is p2, 1, 1, right? That's the new coordinate system, or y1 and y2 instead of. So if I write x is y1 p1 plus y2 p2, then the coordinates of my vector with respect to the basis. So for example, this is y1. I said right. So this is y1. Oops. That's the y1 axis here. That corresponds to p1. So that's where y2 is 0. When y2 is 0, what you're getting, the things with y2 equals 0, they're just the scalar multiples of p1. So that's how you characterize the y1 axis. That's where y2 is 0. And the other axis is perpendicular. That's the one perpendicular to that. Oh, boy. This thing is not very accurate, unfortunately. Okay. Green. There's a little. It's glass. There's a distance between the screen and the pen, so there's the dot supposed to be where everything goes, but it's very difficult to actually get it to match. Okay, so here. So this is going to be the y2 axis. So this is the vector, if you like. This is the vector. If you look here,
So this would be the vector P1, and this would be the vector P2.
So the new axes are now essentially obtained by, if you like, rotating. This is a P1. If you look at P1, that's 45 degrees, because P1 is the vector 1, 1 divided by root 2. So that's a vector, that's the x-axis rotated by 45 degrees. So now in this, now looking at this axis, I have the equation of my curve is y1 squared over a squared plus y2 squared over b squared equals 1. And so that's actually an ellipse with the major axis along the y2 axis that has length 1, and the other axis is 1 over root 3. So for example, 1 over root 3, that's pretty thin here. So I mean, this would be so in other words, if you put y2 equal to 0, you're going to get y1 is going to be plus or minus 1 over root 3. So y1, this is 1 over root 3, and then minus 1 over root 3 over there. And then if you take where it now cuts the y2 axis, that's where y1 is 0. So if you put y1 equals 0 in the equation, you're going to get y2 squared is 1, so y2 is plus or minus 1. So here you're going to get, so it's actually going to go through these two points, and then the other one on the other side. So well, the scale is not really quite good here. If I rub this out, it's going to all go away. Yeah. That's the danger with this thing. So anyway, I just drew this. Okay, so the I'll put it here. Oh, that's green again. So I don't know. Okay, so the ellipse is, well, it's 1 and minus 1, so it's just going to be like that. Wow, it's an egg. Well, it's not good. So the long axis is along the y2 axis. That's where it's furthest away from the origin. Okay, it's a flattened ellipse. So the point is, when you're now, if you try to sketch this curve, it's much more easily sketched in terms of the axis, in terms of the coordinate system, where the x y term is no longer there. So in effect, you got rid of the x y term. those of you who have studied this conics before, there's other ways you can actually give a formula for the angle, but in this case it comes out very nicely without, you don't have to memorize any formulas for the angle. It comes out of just diagonalizing quadratic forms, and so you get, as the axes of the conic or of the curve, the eigenvectors of the matrix A that you use to represent the quadratic form. Okay. You can also see the okay. So in other words, we have this. We can actually sketch curve the length of the major axis. Well, it's equal to it's 2. Because the A is just half the length, it's the semi-major axis, and the length of the minor axis is 2 over root 3. If there was a minus there instead, if the eigenvalues were, instead of being 1, it was minus 1, then I'd have a difference of squares, and that curve would actually be a hyperbola. So anyway, this gives an application of being able to study curves, quadratic curves, by essentially rotating the axis. You see the... In this particular case, let's just go back and see that if you look at that matrix P that we had,
if you look at the matrix B, which was formed by the columns, these columns, 1 over root 2, 1 over root 2, okay. Actually, there's something wrong with this diagram. What were the columns of P? It was 1 over root 2 and minus 1 over root 2. So in fact, the P2 is not there, right? The P2 that I, in this one, is 1 over root 2 minus 1 over root 2. So actually the P2 is, it's going to bring out an interesting point. So here, that actually, so actually the P2 is not there. So actually P2 was here. Okay. So in fact, what I said before about rotating wasn't quite correct. So if I wanted if I wanted to make my axes obtained by rotating the x1, x2 axis through 45 degrees, I should have taken, instead of 1 over root 2, minus 1 over root 2, the one you suggested, minus 1 over root 2, root 2. Okay. Now, you can notice here in this particular case, so in other words, I should have, so this is a matrix P, and you can check the determinant of P in this particular case is minus a half, minus a half is minus 1. Now, if you look at a rotation matrix looks like what? Cos theta, sine theta, minus sine theta, cos theta. And that matrix, the term of that matrix is cos squared plus sine squared, which is 1. So you can identify a rotation matrix, an orthogonal matrix, a rotation matrix, if it has that form. So if you take a cos theta, sine theta, if you take a rotation matrix and just replace the second column by minus it, you'll get a matrix of determinant minus 1. And it won't be a rotation. It's actually a rotation followed by a reflection. So if I want a rotation matrix, if I want to actually, if I choose, it doesn't change the form. If I choose, say, Q equals 1 over root 2, 1 over root 2, minus 1 over root 2, 1 over root 2, instead of P, we have Q equals, well, it'll be cosine 45, sine 45, minus sine 45, cosine 45 degrees. So this is a rotation matrix. Okay. In other words, that matrix, if you apply it to any vector, just rotates it's just a rotation through 45 degrees. But you still have the same thing. I mean, it doesn't change. You'll have P transposed AP. This is going to be the same as Q transposed AQ, because both they're still orthonormal, and the eigenvectors don't change. I mean, you just replace one eigenvector by minus that eigenvector, so nothing changes. So when you're diagonalizing a matrix, and you have a symmetric matrix, and you have a matrix P, you can always, by possibly multiplying the second column by minus 1, convert it into a rotation matrix. Okay, so there's one with determinant 1. And so this is, in other words, so what I said before is, so now you can see that the direction of the y2 axis, which I had before, is also not correct, because this would be the y2 direction. instead of choosing P Q, in effect, what I've done, I just replace Y2 by minus Y2. So if I want to change coordinates by changing the direction, then I will change Y2 into minus Y2, but that won't change the equation of the curve. The equation of the curve stays the same, and you, but it just makes a little bit difference in terms of, so in other words, if we now put the columns here, if we put these columns here, what they would be, so here this would be this vector here, this would be Q2, and this would be equal to Q1. So in terms, if I now use instead of P1, P2, so if I have X equals PY, this is going to be equal to Q, say, Z, then Z is going to be, call it, say, Z1, Z2, then you're going to have Z1 equals Z2, Z1 equals to Y1, and Z2 equals minus Y2. Right, because this is equal to Y1 P1 plus Y2 P2, and this is Z1 Q1 plus Z2 Q2. So Q2 is minus P1, is minus P2, so that would mean Z2 is going to have to be minus Z1. So in other words, just by changing the coordinates from being y1, y2 to y1 minus y2, basically what I've done is I'm just reflecting in the y1 axis just by doing a reflection. So in other words, basically the other make was a rotation reflection. I got rid of the reflection. Now it becomes a rotation. Okay. So in general, one usually chooses a rotation matrix because it makes it easier to actually do the sketches. So it's another basis. So you can see that the coordinates, the new coordinate system behaves just like the old coordinate system. It's an orthogonal coordinate system, but it's adapted to the particular problem in question. If you wanted to study that curve, by just choosing the appropriate axis, the equation of the curve becomes simpler, and you can actually sketch it and identify it, whereas it wouldn't be so easy to sketch it beforehand. So that's one application. Another application has to do with maxima and minima. Before I go on to the general case, let's do another application. So find the maximum and minimum value of this x. So I'll do 2x1 squared plus 2x1x2 plus x2 squared, subject to the constraint x1 squared plus x2 squared equals to 1. Okay. Now this is in 222. I don't know, some of you are taking 222, but I mean, 220. This is a very important type of problem. You're trying to maximize this quadratic form on that circle x1, x2. So if you look at this quadratic form, it has values on the circle x1 plus x2 squared. And you want the maximum and minimum values of that function on that circle. So this is a constraint type problem, and these types of problems can be solved just as well using this procedure. So the point is, what we've just shown is that 2x1 squared plus 2x1x2 plus x2 squared, we can write that as 3y1 squared plus y2 squared, where y1 and y2 has been chosen as we did before. Now, what is the relationship between, if I take a point on the unit circle, I claim then, and y1 squared plus y2 squared is again 1. Okay. In other words, if I
perform, if I take the circle x squared plus y squared, x1 squared plus x2 squared equals 1, and I make an orthogonal change of coordinates, when in effect I'm just rotating that circle, by rotating a circle, you stay on the circle. So let's just see that, for example, here. If you remember that x, let's just do this, x1 squared, x2 squared, you can write this as x1, x2, y, x, then times it's the dot product of the vector with itself. So let's just write that. So this is x1, x2. Okay. Now, this is equal to y1, y2, P transposed, P, y1, y2. So in other words, all I've done there is replace x1, x2, x1, x2 by what it is in terms of y. It's P times y, y1, y2. Same thing as I did before with a matrix A. I do it basically with the identity matrix in the middle. So here, P transpose P is the identity. So this collapses. So this is equal to, so this part, this is equal to 1, the identity matrix. So what I just get is y1 squared plus y2 squared. So in other words, if I want to take this find the maximum value of this quadratic form on the circle, all I can do is I just change my axes so that I rotate the axes to get rid of the cross term. Okay. Now the problem then becomes to maximize 3y1 squared plus y2 squared subject to the constraint y1 squared plus y2 squared is 1. Now it's very easy to see the maximum and minimum values of y1 and y2 of this. So if you take 3y1, now it's very easy to solve the problem. If you take 3y1 squared plus y2 squared, okay. Now this is certainly less than or equal to 3y1 squared plus 3y2 squared, which is equal to 3y1 squared plus y2 squared, which is 3, because y1 squared plus y2 squared is 1. So certainly the thing on the left-hand side is at most 3. And it actually does take the value 3 when y1 is 1 and y2 is 0. So it does take on the value 3. And going the other way, you can just go the other way. This is greater than or equal to y1 squared plus y2 squared. So in other words, if you take this quadratic form where there's no mixed terms, then it's easy to pick the maximum value. The maximum value would be the maximum coefficient of one of the squares, and the minimum value would be the minimum. In fact, what you're basically showing is that the maximum and minimum value, if you take this quadratic form that we've written here, what is the significance of 3 and 1? The 3 and the 1 were eigenvalues of that matrix A that we used to represent the quadratic form. So to compute the maximum and minimum values on the unit circle, the maximum value is the largest eigenvalue. The minimum value is the smallest eigenvalue. So you can see the role of eigenvalues in problems of maxima and minima. They come up in many places, and this is one particular case. So this is going to be equal to 1. So therefore, the max and minimum values are 3 and 1, and they occur at y1 equals to 1, y2 equals 0. Well, actually, what is y1 equals 1, y2 equals 0? Actually, what is that vector in terms of the original vectors? What is that vector, y1 equals 1, y2 equals to 0? That was the so that's y1 equals 1, y2 equals 0. That's the vector p1, which is 1 over root 2, 1 over root 2. So let's just i.e. 1 over root 2, 1 over root 2. If they occur there, they actually occur at the other side as well. So actually, they occur at each side. So at plus or minus 1 as well. So I could put here plus or minus 1.
So this would be plus or minus 1 over root 2. Oh, plus or minus 1 over root 2. That would be the, actually in this case, the short axis. Be the vector 1 over root 2. And the other one, and y1 equals 0, y2 equals plus or minus 1, i.e. plus or minus 1 over root 2, minus 1 over root 2. And that's respectively. Okay.
So you can now see the different ways you can look at this quadratic form. Now let's do it a little bit more generally. In general, so we've done the 2x2 case, and you've seen the main applications to the study of quadratic curves, which you can study by rotating the axes. That is, represent the rotation is obtained by, or the axes, the new axes of rotation will be the eigenvectors of the matrix A that you use to represent the quadratic form in. The other one, you want the maximum minimum value of that quadratic form on the unit circle. The maximum values are the maximum minimum eigenvalues of the matrix A that you use, again, to represent the quadratic form. So that one matrix that you use to represent that quadratic form has many applications. Okay. So let's just do now in general. Let's not look at the general case. Is there any, I mean, you have web work questions on that as well. This actually generalizes just not just to 2x2, but to 3x3, the same principle holds. Anything I've said in the 2x2 case holds in general. So if you have a 3x3 matrix, so let's look at in the general case. So we have a if you have a quadratic form, let's take Q x1 xn, which you usually can write it this way. It'll be just the quadratic expression. You're going to have the a11x1 squared, let's just write down all the square terms, and nxn squared. And then twice the cross terms, sum of terms of the form aij xi xj, your I less than j. Why the 2 is there, because normally, let's do it this way, sorry. And get rid of the 2. And then you're going to have the cross terms I not equal to j. And here, aij equals aji. Now, you can always write a quadratic form in this way. This quadratic form can be written as a11 squared plus, let me write, so you can write this quadratic form as sum aiixi squared, I equals 1 to n, plus, now twice the sum, I less than j, aijxi. Xj. Now, because you're just bringing together the two terms. Now, this quadratic form, you can write it, you can always write it in this form. You can write this as x transposed ax, where x is this x1 xn transposed, and a is the matrix aij. So any quadratic form can be written in this way. So this is a general. So this is what we call, this is a QXX is what we call a quadratic form. So Q is a quadratic form in n variables. And A is its matrix. Again, with respect to the standard basis. It's standard matrix with respect to a standard basis. Now, it's very easy to actually prove that. I mean, I'll let you work that out. If you take x1
xn, and then multiply it by this matrix, a11, a1n, an1, ann, and then times x1, xn, and then you're going to get this matrix, ax1, xn, times this matrix, a11, x1, plus a1n, xn, and an1, x1, plus ann, xn. Now, if you just multiply that row vector by that column vector, you see what you're going to get. You're going to get a11 x1 squared plus a11 x1 x2. And then you're going to get again, so you're going to get, terms of the, same, of that form, but you're going to pick up in addition to the, that expression that we had above. So this will work out to, I won't complete the calculation here. If you just work that out, you'll see it'll be equal to, this will be equal to Q. You just work out the calculation. Because if you do it row by row, you're going to get A11x1 squared plus A12x1x2, et cetera. And then A1nx1xn. Now, if you multiply, that's the first row. If you multiply the second row by x2, you're going to get a21x2x1, but a12 is a21, so you're just going to so you're going to get exactly what I wrote above. Let's just do quickly an example for n equals to 3. Let's take n equals to 3. So let me take, for example, x1 squared plus x 2x1 x2 plus x 2x x2 x3 plus x3 squared. Here's a quadratic form. And now I claim that you can write this way. This will be x1 x2 x3 times a matrix, a symmetric matrix, x1, x2, x3. Now, what are the entries you can read off? Well, the diagonal terms are just the coefficients of x1 squared, x2 squared, and x3 squared. And so that's going to be 1. Coefficient of x2 squared, it's not there. It's 0. Coefficient of x3 squared is 1. Okay. Now, the coefficient of x1, x2, that'll be the entry in the first row, second column. So a12 will be the coefficient of x1, x2, half the coefficient. Right? So it'll be, normally you don't write it x1, x2 plus x2, x1. You bring them together. This is why you write it in this particular way. So, but when you want to compute the matrix, you have to set up a term here. Like, so this is going to be a 1 and a 1. Now, there's no x1, x3, so you have a 0 here. And a 0 there. Now the coefficient of x2, x3 is 1, so the matrix entry will be half of that. So it'll be 1 half. So this will be 1 half and 1 half. Okay. So that's the matrix. So the matrix A is a symmetric matrix, 1, 1, 0, 1, 0, 1 half, 0, 1 half, 1 is the matrix of the quadratic form. With respect to the standard basis. Okay. So, if you put this equal to 1, this will be, that's going to be a locus of 3 variables. Some qx, q equals to 1 would be, represent in this case, a surface. So, this is what we call a quadric surface, and it's very difficult to sketch as it is. If you want to sketch it, then you have to rotate the axes. In other words, what you're going to have to do is get rid of the cross terms. By getting rid of the cross terms, you can write it as a sum of squares, and then you can identify it much more easily as we did for the ellipse case. So that's, and for example, if I asked you to find the maximum, find the maximum and minimum value of this quadratic form on the circle x squared plus y squared equals 1, what it would be the largest and the smallest eigenvalues would be the maximum minimum of that quadratic form on the circle. So that would be a particular application. To do that, all you have to do is find the eigenvalues of that. You don't even have to find the eigenvectors. Finding the eigenvalues would be enough. Okay, and that you can do in many ways. So let me just give a brief indication how to prove this theorem. So in other words, let me just give an indication of the proof of the theorem that any symmetric matrix is orthogonally diagonalizable. Okay, what are the columns of P? So we want a matrix P with, well, P inverse equals P transpose. That's what it means to be orthogonal, or P transpose P is the identity, and P inverse AP, a diagonal matrix. Now, you don't need to know the proof of this theorem to actually do it. It just works. If you take any symmetric matrix, then it will be orthogonally diagonalizable. And you know how to actually do it. Well, the p's are going to be eigenvectors. So what you do is you find a basis for each eigenspace. Since you know it's going to be diagonalizable, you're going to have the geometric multiplicity will be the algebraic. So you'll have enough eigenvectors to make up a basis. Now, eigenvectors corresponding to distinct eigenvalues, you'll see in a minute, are automatically orthogonal. So what you have to do is, if you look at the eigenvectors that you found for a given eigenspace, they may or may not be orthogonal. If they're not, you have to apply Gram-Schmidt to transform them into an orthogonal basis. So that's basically the only additional thing that you have to do to solve, to find P that you knew before. You do the same steps, find a basis of eigenvectors. The theorem says you can. And the next step is to actually find an orthogonal basis. The vectors that you got down, if the vectors were distinct, then it'll be automatically orthogonal, as we'll just see in a minute. Okay, so it is a diagonal matrix. This is so first of all, basically it's step one. Let P1, let P well supposing AX equals mu X and AY equals lambda y, and x and y not equal to 0. What I'm saying here is that I'm looking now at eigenvectors corresponding distinct eigenvalues. I want to prove they're orthogonal. X dot y, which is x transpose y, equals 0.
Yeah.
Mu. I'm just taking two eigenvectors of A. So I'm going to prove that they're actually orthogonal. So this is the statement that eigenvectors correspond to distinct eigenvalues of a symmetric matrix are automatically orthogonal. Okay. Now here the proof of that is basically the following. We already did it for the 2x2 case. The proof is the same. So if you take AX dot Y, this is equal to AX. So on the one hand, AX is equal to mu X. And AX dot Y, this is equal to AX transposed Y, if we write it in matrix form. And this is X transposed A transposed Y. But A transposed is A, because A is symmetric. But AY is lambda Y. Sorry, there's a Y missing there. So. So this is equal to lambda X transposed Y, because AY is lambda Y, and it can take the lambda out. So basically, this implies that mu of X dot Y equals lambda of X dot Y times X dot Y. So this implies that mu minus lambda X dot Y is 0. And this implies that X dot Y equals 0, since lambda is not equal to mu. So this is the statement, the proof of the statement that eigenvectors of a symmetric matrix eigenvectors of a symmetric matrix corresponding to distinct eigenvalues are automatically orthogonal. So you don't have to, that should be. So for example, if you had a symmetric matrix and you found a basis and the eigenvalues were all distinct, then you just take a basis for each eigenspace, then that will already be an orthogonal basis. And you can, if you just normalize that, you'll get an orthonormal basis. So the step two in the proof is to check that the eigenvalues of A are all real. In other words, a symmetric matrix cannot have a complex eigenvalue. We already checked that for 2x2 case. We checked that a symmetric 2x2 matrix automatically has all its eigenvectors, all its eigenvalues real. Now, the proof of this is basically you have to know something about the complex numbers. So you need a little bit about complex numbers and what is complex conjugation. So you need a little bit about. So if I want to prove the eigenvalues are all real, I have to deal with complex numbers. Even though they're not there, I want to prove they're not there. So complex numbers look like are of the form, say, A plus IB, where A and B are real. And I squared is this mysterious number whose square is minus 1. Now, if you look at it very carefully, those things look like the A and B, that corresponds to a point in the plane. I would be correspond to A equals 0, B equals 1. That would be 0, 1. So basically what this does is give you a. So in other words, if you want to multiply two complex numbers, A plus IB, C plus ID, this is all you need to know, is that the arithmetic is the same. The rules of the game are the same. You have associative law, distributive laws hold. And so if you multiply this all out, you're going to get AC plus I squared BD. I squared is minus 1 minus BD. And then plus I into AD plus BC. So this is how you multiply complex numbers. And then there's another operation called complex conjugation, which plays an important role. If you take the conjugate, this is A minus IB. Now, if you take a point in the plane and you just reflect it in the x-axis, you get the point AB, and you get A minus B. So that's the complex conjugate. Now, why complex conjugates are important is that, you see, the only way a number could equal be real is that a complex number is real is that it equals its complex conjugate. So A plus IB is real. So let's call this number. Traditionally, we call them Z. Z equals this complex number, I plus B is real, if and only if B equals 0. And that's the same thing as saying that Z is equal to Z bar, its complex conjugate. Because A plus IB conjugate is A minus IB. The only way A plus IB equals A minus IB is for B to be to be zero. That's the only thing, the only point in the plane which is equal to its reflection in the x-axis is a point on the x-axis. Okay. Well, I'll finish the other part later. Let's just check that the eigenvalues are real. So basically, if we take, so let say ax equals lambda x, and lambda is complex. Okay. So now supposing we factor a characteristic polynomial, and we found a complex root, and with that complex root, you can actually write down and solve the equations. The equations won't involve real numbers anymore. They involve complex numbers, but you can, the process is the same. And now I want to prove that lambda equals to lambda bar. So if you take a x dot with x, well, here I'm going to take, actually, I want to take a x bar. Now remember, x, I have to put a conjugate here. Putting a conjugate over that vector means I'm just, see, ax is just equal to the entries of a matrix. In other words, if you take a vector x equals x1, xn, then the conjugate of that, that's going to be just replace them, all the entries by their conjugates. You have to remember here that the entries of x are going to be complex entries because the eigenvalue was complex, and if you solve the characteristic equation with complex roots, you're going to get complex numbers instead of real numbers. But the arithmetic is the same. You just do the formal process and it works out the same way. Now, why I want, you'll see in a minute why I put the complex conjugate here. So this is going to be equal to, again, this will be a x conjugate and then transpose times x. Now, if I take the product of a conjugate, one of the important properties of the product of the conjugate I should have mentioned here, that if you take two complex numbers, z1, z2, conjugate, it's the product of their conjugates. That's an important property that you need to do this. And so, in that, so this, if you actually do this in this particular case, what you're going to get is x conjugate transposed times a conjugate transposed a times x, and what this works out to, and now ax is equal to this, and the right hand here I should put here, I can take out ax is lambda x, so this is going to be lambda x bar, just we're almost done, x dot, dot x here, because ax is lambda x, and if I conjugate that, I'm going to get lambda conjugate times x conjugate. And if I put this on the other side, so on the right-hand side, so over here, if I do this over here, this is going to be, now A conjugate is, A is real matrix, so it's A, it's equal to its conjugate, and A transpose equals to A, so this is x conjugate transposed AX, and AX, we said, was lambda x, so this is x conjugate transposed times lambda. I just finished here. So this is going to be lambda x conjugate transposed times x. So what we see here, now the point is, what you have here is that the point is that why we put the conjugate here is the following reason. Because if you look at x times its conjugate, it's just the sum of the squares. So in other words, what this shows here is that, just to finish this up quickly. So this implies that lambda bar, now x conjugate is, this is going to be, actually this is going to be x, well, let me just put x1 squared. Oh boy. Oh no. Oh my. Okay. Oh my. Okay. I'll put this in the notes. Basically, what's going to happen here is that you're going to have lambda bar. Minus lambda, if you just subtract the two expressions, x conjugate transpose x equals zero, but you can actually show that X conjugate transposed is not going to be zero. X conjugate transposed is not going to be zero. In fact, what that is going to be the, if you think of the absolute value of X1 squared plus absolute value of Xn squared. Because if you look at Z times Z bar, this is actually the absolute value of Z squared, which is just A squared plus B squared.
If you think of the complex number as a vector, then Z times Z bar is just the square of its length. It's just the sum of the squares of the entries. Anyway, this is a technical point, but OK, we'll finish here.